This week on the Reflex Blue Show with Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, author, illustrator, and creator of The Daily Monster, Stefan Bucher. Okay, hi, and welcome to the Reflex Blue Show. I'm Nate Voss.
I'm Donovan Beery.
Hey, this is good times. Man, I'm awful this morning.
Hi, today is me, Stefan Bucher, the unpronounceable designer.
There you go. That's pretty good. That's way better than I could have done. Well, let's see here. Why don't you introduce everybody to Stefan very quickly, if you will.
He is a writer, a graphic designer, and an illustrator, and he is a man behind the California design studio, 344 Design. Is that right? 344design.com?
Yes, indeed.
And he's actually the creator of The Daily Monsters, and he's got, I think you're up to 168.
You're giving me credit for one more than I've done.
We're giving you credit for the one for
this
today.
This isn't going up until Wednesday, if that helps. If you're going to throw another couple in,
well,
it'll be daily.
Well, it'll be the one. Well, I'm on a hiatus right now because we're here in Seward, Nebraska, where I've just done a monster mural with the students of Concordia University.
Right, and will that be up by the time this show goes live? Hopefully we can have
professors
here.
That's going up live. I believe that's going up tonight.
Yeah.
It's installing tonight.
It is being installed as we speak here.
Nice.
Yeah, and we would like to thank also Professor Paul Birkbigler.
Yeah, Paul, the Dr. Drew of design, as one of our listeners has so aptly described him. He has all the sex appeal and the knowledge. He just has not quite as much of the gray hair, but that's coming. I've seen. He certainly wears enough layers also. But big thanks to Paul for letting us come out here and spend some time with you, and thanks for being on the show. I'd like to talk about the book first, actually.
You'd like to talk about... Now, this is actually your second book. You also did another book.
Oh, geez.
All Access, The Making of 30 Extraordinary Graphic Designers.
Yes,
and this one is just 100 Daily Monsters. So, was it more work since there were 100 instead of 30?
Yeah, but the 100 monsters are all under my control.
Oh.
So, they don't take their time submitting materials.
Nice.
And I didn't ask that much of each monster as I did of each of the 30 designers.
Well, let's talk about All Access first. But
yes.
I want to spend a good amount of time on 100 Days of Monsters, but All Access, how did that book come about for you? Where was the starting point for that?
The first book, All Access, came out of... actually, it started because I wrote a page for Jan and Hjalti's book, for the guys behind Carlson Wilker,
mm-hmm.
Jan Wilker and Hjalti Carlson.
Okay.
Had a book out about the first 2 years of their studio, Carlson Wilker, called, I believe, Tell Me Why, after the Backstreet Boys song.
Oh, nice.
I get all my inspiration from boy bands.
He really does.
Don't we all? And they asked several of their friends to write a page for their book, and I wrote about the creation story of superheroes. And I said that this book was basically their creation story, their creation myth. And I said, this is great because this is like a time capsule of seeing the work as it emerges, where it's not already buffed to a high shine.
Right.
Because when you've got, 10, 15, 20, 30 years under your belt, you can edit a highlight reel that makes you just look completely infallible.
I'm waiting for that, yes.
Yes.
I can't wait.
Nate's got kind of a highlight, snippet.
I've got what I like to call a low light reel, which mm-hmm. is extensive, and a highlight reel, which again, is just, you get like a flash and just sort of mm-hmm. pow, and it's there and it's gone.
Kind of a spliced in frame there somewhere.
Exactly,
in the
like in Fight Club. It's mm-hmm. a single frame of Brad Pitt in one of my posters. Yeah.
That's the director's cut edition that's on the DVD.
Yeah, it is.
Excellent. So that...
I'm
wrote
in tight
that,
with the Finch.
Once again, aren't we all?
Yeah.
But, so I wrote a page for that, and I sent it to my friend Kristen Ellison, who was then the editor at Rockport, and she actually said, wow, that sounds like it would be a really good book proposal.
Oh, not bad.
And in fact said, we want to do that book. I said, okay, well, I'm not going to say no to that. And it was a great chance for me to actually examine what it's like to be a successful graphic designer and to sort of take a look further on down the road to see what was waiting for me if I really, if I really applied myself, what does the best case scenario look like?
Sure.
What is the best case scenario in this profession?
Best case scenario in this profession seems to be that you always have work and that you just get a little bit more freedom from your clients, but you're going to be at work 18 hours a day for the rest of your life.
Man, that's real motivation.
That's up and down, isn't it?
Yeah. That's got me motivated.
Yeah. Well, you're already there, Donovan. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, there's Pinnacle. There's you got Beirut, you got Sagmeister, and then Donovan Beery, really. So how much of your day-to-day workflow did that book affect? When you take a look, okay, here's how it happened for these 30 extraordinary right. designers. How much did that affect you just on a day-to-day basis of gaining clients, gaining work, and getting work out the door?
You know, it was, I don't know if it was inspirational in the sense of, oh man, if I just do that one missing thing,
yeah,
you know, a halo will sprout from my forehead and it'll all be great. I think it was just a confirmation of, man, this is the life you choose. This is what it's going to be like, and it's going to be slow, steady progress, and there's no hidden password. Because there is, as you're sort of struggling to grow and as you're getting into the business, there is this real feeling that some of these guys and some of these people have the password. They somehow, you know, that there's some sort of connection that they get into a higher echelon, or that there is some sort of inborn talent that they have that gets them there, and you can't possibly get there because you don't have that.
Right.
And that turned out to be really false. It turns out that everybody has talent, but that they all worked incredibly hard at cultivating that talent and seized chances as they were presenting themselves, but really just, you know, put their shoulders into it to get where they are today. So that the good news and the bad news both is that there is no secret password.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, secretly, obviously, I was hoping for that password.
Yeah, maybe you could find it out. Yeah, somebody would
take
me.
Somebody would take me aside and go, "Listen, buddy, what you're really missing is you got to go to this. You know, you got to join this club, or you got to show up at this event."
Then you're like George Costanza, and you're just all with models all the time.
Yeah,
when he got the password,
if you attend X amount of AIGA meetings New York or out, then you're in. Then that's the password or something like that. But.
And for better or for worse, the work is the password,
mm-hmm.
which, again, is really good news and also kind of bad news.
But this did lead you to your second book, which is all about, and it's this one's not about other people's work, it's all about your work.
Well, it's kind of a hybrid. It's spawned by my work in that the monsters sort of became the seed crystal for hundreds of people from all over the world submitting stories. There wouldn't be a book without the stories that people sent in. If it had just been me doing 100 drawings, there wouldn't be a book. I wouldn't have bothered.
Was the initial idea just for you to do 100 drawings and then?
Well, let me give you the backstory.
Yeah, go for it.
So the way the monsters originally came about is I was driving on the 110 on the 10 freeway in LA, and I was going home to Pasadena, and all of a sudden, a vision of a monster appeared on my left arm. And I should say at this point, I don't drink and I don't take drugs. And this is why, because I don't have to, because I see things all the time.
Yeah, you've got
a bonus, man. It's like he's drinking like the dew, like constantly, just straight into the veins.
No, it's like you're already all the way there. You don't need artificial at that point. That's good. Okay, so the monster on your arm, debatable about whether or not it was actually there.
Well, images appear to me, and I thought, oh, this looks fun. I should probably draw this creature. Looked friendly, and it worked out so well that I, in very quick succession, drew 50 of them and put them together in a children's book called Upstairs Neighbors, about sort of the strange, undefinable noises that come from upstairs. And I shopped that around, and nobody wanted to publish that book.
Little too spooky, probably.
Yeah, might have been a bit early. The craze had not yet begun.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Okay. So then, at that point, you get shot down. And this, and I'm trying to remember because I just listened to the story the other day, and it's following that, I believe, and not to bring things up, I believe there was some sort of heartache in there.
There was a little bit of heartache in there,
and that may have been where we reconnect with the story.
Right. Well, as I was waiting for the publishers to make up their mind, I was also, as I had previously said, in the process of getting my heart broken, and decided that, you know, making funny drawings might be a way of winning somebody back.
It works. If you can't write songs.
Right.
Yeah. If you're not musically inclined, I would probably do the same thing.
It worked a little, but not really.
Okay.
But it got me drawing, and so that's good. And so I started doing these monsters daily, and I thought, you know, I thought I'll film myself drawing these creatures to just keep myself interested in the whole Upstairs Neighbors project. And I thought, well, you know, I had a blog that I just started at the time. I thought, okay, well, this is going to be something great to put up on the blog every day. And actually, Zay Frank, who had seen me speak at the Howe conference, or had seen me at that sort of Iron Chef thing that they were doing at the Howe conference.
Said,
man, that was such a bummer. I just wanted to see you draw, and they were having you do all this finger painting stuff. I just came to see you draw. And he was talking to me based on his experience with the show with Zay Frank, which was a daily experience. He said, you know, I see you doing these posters that take you 5 months to make. Have you ever thought of doing a little bit every day instead of, you know, that can be released every day versus something that's this big thing after 5 months?
Does make more sense for a blog.
Yes.
Yeah, the once every 5 months blogging experience, not so successful.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. Yeah.
Not very satisfying. So as a combination of all those factors, I started filming myself doing these monsters. And very quickly after the first few appeared, people started writing in stories about them. And the way it started, actually, is that somebody asked me, well, what's this monster called? And I said, well, that's not my job. My job is just, you know, to let the monsters come through the pen through me. And it's up to you to tell me what it's called or what it listens to. And from that, very quickly, it expanded into stories being written about them. Specifically, around number 10, I think, there was a gentleman from the UK who started writing in Simon. And Simon wrote the first sort of long story that really showed what the format could hold.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it just exploded, and people wrote in from everywhere.
Now, this is the point where I admit to being completely awful. Until I heard your interview on Debbie's show, I didn't know that that's where the stories came from. Yeah. I had only just gone, watched the videos, and been like, oh, man, I wish I was doing something cool like that, and then would move on with my day because I only had about that much time.
Right.
And he's got no imagination to write a story.
Yeah, really lackluster on the imagination. That's why that's why I was an art director. I'm not an art director anymore.
So. Right. Well, that'll hold you back.
So that was all news to me. So now I can't wait now for the book.
And now the book's also got a DVD on it?
Yes, it does. So it has, it basically has all the first 100 monster clips on DVD, remastered, so it's nice and sharp, and you can play it on your computer, play it on your TV, and you can see them all in succession if you so desire, which may give you a brain hemorrhage, so, you know.
What's the total length of time for?
It's about 2 hours.
Wow. Have you watched them back to back?
I have.
Is it better to watch it while you're sniffing Sharpie markers? Is it giving more of an authentic feel?
You just got to open up all your inks and your markers and just let them sit in front of you so you get that that art smell.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
Watch it. You could do scratch and sniff on the next one.
Oh, yeah.
What
well,
does each monster smell like?
They all smell like Sharpies.
It turns out they all smell like Sharpies.
And where can our listeners go and purchase a copy of this book?
The best place to get the book is on Amazon, but every bookstore, your favorite bookstore, will carry it. Borders, Barnes & Noble, all the major bookstores are going to have it.
So the other thing we want to talk about, and this is actually, you had mentioned this, but it's actually probably the way Nate may live his life, is the following your heart when it seems you're responsible. Now, doing this, it leads you down a slow path of poverty. Is that what you're telling me? So this is a good thing?
Well, I'm kidding a little bit, but I mean, it seems to be that there, in the short term, there are definitely some financially irresponsible choices that happen because of that. I started out as an art director at an ad agency. The financially responsible choice would have been to really make that work and make that happen and start directing TV commercials mm-hmm. and, you know, just really put away a nice nest egg. But my heart just wasn't in it, which also led to me being fired from that agency.
Right.
That was Wyden, yeah.
Okay.
And they're really great guys, and I was just a bad fit, and I didn't know how to handle the opportunities that were there. They're running at a really, really high speed, so they're not really set up to tutor babes in woods. There's a joke here, but, you know, we'll insert that later. But over the years, the more I go towards things that I actually really deeply care about, the more it seems to attract the other crazies.
Mm-hmm.
So my clients and I are now sort of like dog and owner, me being the dog in this metaphor, I think, start looking alike more. And I'm finding the more I do what I love to do, I get only approached by people whose work I also love. So there's at this point very rarely a moment where clients approach me and I go, oh man, this seems like a really, really bad match to me. You know, it's usually, you know, one of the clients I work for is Tarsem, the movie director who directed The Cell with Jennifer Lopez. Mm-hmm. And I did a book for his new movie. And then from that, ended up doing the opening and closing credits of the movie and the trailer and all and everything. I'm working with a photographer now, Jonah Frank, who's working on a new book, a photojournalistic essay, and I'm designing that for her. And I'm meeting all these people, and it's really like meeting old friends the minute you meet them.
That's fantastic. So there's a sort of, oh, and now my vocabulary has immediately left me, but you're finding a commonality.
Yes.
Between your work. Now, yes. And that, I would just assume, would not be something that would happen if you were still at the advertising agency.
Right, because, I mean, at that point, you're very much controlled by outside forces.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you have, I mean, the thing I always talk about, and this goes directly back to, you know, following your heart, the way to make that happen is greed control, and that is to keep your overhead as low as possible, because I actually do think that greed is that debt is the new sin. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, debt is how Whitey's keeping you down. And but in all seriousness, having a lot of debt to service every month, how can you form a free thought in your head if your main concern is, how do I pay the mortgage? How do I pay the rent? How do I pay for my health insurance? And this is, I mean, I'm a single guy. I live by myself. I have only myself to take care of financially and in LA. So it's easier for me. I don't know how you would do it with a family, for example. So anybody who can make that happen, I just have the highest admiration for. So it's also a little bit easier for me to talk about that. Like, well, you know, you shouldn't have debt because then you can really be a groovy artist.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the path that has worked for me. And the more, the less overhead I have, the more freedom I have to say no to jobs that don't fit me. And through that, the work gets better.
But no, it also makes it so agree. That I make less money. And I mean, I've taken a massive pay cut to go to a place I thought I'd be happier at, or at least continue to grow at. And then I took another pay cut,
mm-hmm.
to decide to open up my own shop because, mm-hmm. and it was probably irresponsible, but it was, mm-hmm. it was the thing I knew I was for the, if you think long-term, that's right. What you got to do.
Well, otherwise you burn out. You know, and that you make more money in the beginning, but then you're going to be a slave to that paycheck.
Right. I went in with hair. I left without.
Same here.
Yeah. I still have. I have enough actually at this point for probably we could split between the three.
Oh, is that real?
Yeah. No, this is it. It. Yeah.
He's not in the hair club for men yet, but, you know, come back around show 40.
Yeah. Right. Check my mom's dad out. You know, I think that's where that comes from. It should be dropping momentarily. But yeah. And I've had a similar experience. I was an art director, and I definitely feel what you're saying, the joke, and maybe I dropped this joke on the last show, I already can't remember, but it's very difficult being an art director because you have to be able to do what you're told at a moment's notice. Even though they sell you on that job, we want your creativity, we want you to do this, we want, you know, all of your ideas, but at the end of the day, they want you to meet the client's needs, do the things that the client wants, and unless it's in extraordinary cases, you know, the very top people at the very best firms, you're really executing on ideas that have already been formed. You don't get that expression that well, quite honestly, you get all the time now in just about everything that I see you do.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And I was going to say, I mean, there are many art directors out there that I've seen that do really wonderful, amazing work. And that somehow do it with integrity, and they get their ideas through, and they make it happen in a way that just blows my mind. I'm just too cranky. I think I'm just too cantankerous to actually pull that off.
Nice. Well, I would be too if I saw all those monsters running around my room.
Yeah.
Right.
And my arm and stuff.
Well, and it's been, I just want to mention real briefly, shout out to our mutual friend, Kathy Solaron. It's
yes.
Because of Kathy that I've been able to keep up with your work over the last couple of years, because I worked with her mm-hmm. for about 2.5 years, and so you'd send her a poster, yep. It would go up on the wall, and we'd spend, you know, just, you know, a half hour every morning when we should be working, instead of drinking coffee and trying to pick out whose face that is on the big face tree, and what? Reading all of Donovan loves your 3-point type on that one mm-hmm. poster. And
well, and Kathy is one of those people that actually, you know, that actually makes some really beautiful work happen, and she's at Bailey Lowerman
yep.
in Omaha. and does wonderful work. She just had a bunch of stuff in Grafis, I think.
Yeah.
So
I think they were just in Communication Arts too.
Yeah, she had a couple pieces in there.
Yeah, it's not so bad being Kathy, turns out. So hey, you know what? I'll bet, is it time?
It's almost time, but I also want to mention this is our second show.
It is.
And Stefan here is one of the, with Steve Hartman, is one of the other judges that was the last one to shut me out of the AIG Nebraska show.
That's right. The last.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Or I apologize.
No. I have to do what
please,
I did to
please.
Steve.
No. Please put the gun away. Yeah.
No, actually,
Donovan.
I'm supposed to
it's
do
not
the right
worth
thing.
It
is.
It's not that.
I got to do the right thing and say that, you know, thank you for making me do so much better because I haven't been shut out since, unlike Nate.
Whatever. I got shut out
Snap.
Last year and he keeps bringing that up.
I know.
It's okay. It was the first show I got a gold in for my big, shiny, fluorescent poster with the blender on.
Yeah, you gave him an award.
Mm-hmm. I got a gold award that year. How many did you get?
I got shut out.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Hey, now okay. What time is it, Donovan?
It's the Reflex Blue round.
Yes. Now, you're on the Reflex Blue show, and it's the Reflex Blue trivia round. We're debating whether or not we need to rename the trivia round. We're gonna
I don't
come
know.
Back
the double
that.
Reflex Blue is pretty hot.
Yeah.
It's by the way, Reflex Blue is the ink I have on my business card.
That's nice.
It keeps coming back.
That is right.
That color never goes away.
Okay. Because you did the 100 monsters, we're asking for the better monster, Godzilla or King Kong?
Ooh, King Kong for force, Godzilla for style.
Judge?
Okay, now the judge's official answer on this is that it's a never-ending battle that cannot ultimately be won by either. Sort of.
Isn't that exactly what I said?
I was just going the longer route to say that's pretty much the correct answer, yes.
Okay, now your company's 344, or is it 344? Is it 344, or is it...
It is 344.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're on
36point.com. Yep.
So 344 divided by 36.
King Kong.
The answer, I think, was somewhere around 9.
Yeah,
Judge?
Our official answer is somewhere around 9, but so unfortunately we can't accept King Kong.
Okay, Stefan, was the alter ego of what Family Matters character?
Gotta go with, Family Matters. I was going to say Brian, but that's Family Guy. Except without the alcohol.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of alcohol.
Family Matters. Oh, man.
Mid-90s.
There's a lacuna here. Wait a second. Family Matters. Meredith Baxter Burney. Alex P. Keaton. Is this?
Oh, that's
no, that's Family Ties.
Oh, Family Matters. Mid-90s.
Oh, is this?
Had the cop.
Oh,
from
you're
Die
trying
Hard.
You're trying to get me to say that I'm Urkel.
Yes.
Oh,
and yet I'm not.
The correct answer. Okay. Now,
Stefan is the alter ego of Urkel.
In the show, apparently. It was. We're just going off your first name. Okay.
Clearly, I was gonna go with. You know, the guy who was also in the Die Hard movies, mm-hmm. Paul Winfield.
Yes.
Man.
I am the Paul Winfield of graphic design.
I feel bad. I'm not up
wow.
on Family Matters.
I am so using that. We are going to use that to sell the show.
Okay, now you also did the design. You used to do a lot of soundtrack design.
This is true.
Albums back before it was just JPEGs. I believe it's only JPEG
yes,
design now. Since you did the soundtrack for The Matrix, you're supposed to name at least two styles of fighting that Neo learns in the movie.
He knows Kung Fu.
Kung Fu is one, yes. I'll give you a half point already if you can name one other specific style of fighting that he learns in that film.
Being emotionally withholding.
Ooh, it is Keanu Reeves.
Judge? We'll take it. Yeah, we'll take that. Would have also accepted drunken boxing.
Ah, yes, drunken boxing.
Okay. And since you do all these, I can still smell the Sharpie man from this Daily Monster you just did. It's like... I can't even concentrate.
Yeah.
With it. But what year was the Sharpie invented?
Ooh, I'm looking forward to flunking this one because then you'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with 1947.
1964.
Really?
1964.
Oh, same year as a year after the Beatles. So the Sharpie postdates the Beatles.
Might have been inspired by the Beatles.
Quite
was
possibly
was originally
so.
Endorsed by Johnny Carson. And the company that founded it was that 1850 something.
I don't know
when the company that owns the Sharpie was originally.
Nate found his facts on the internet, so
yeah, well,
it's
all on Sharpie.com. It's not that hard to find, but yeah, 1964.
Okay, real quick then. The other thing we always ask of our guests.
Oh wait, was that our five?
Yeah, he's got.
Okay,
three
so
five.
We got three out of five. Not bad. Not a bad
showing.
All
right, all right.
The official scorekeeper on my left hand.
So I don't get into the Reflex Blue College now because I'm in the 60th percentile.
Right. Well, we don't get in the hall. No one's quite gotten into the hall. How did Steve do? Did he got three out of five too? Right.
Yeah.
So you're maintaining your status quo.
For the new show, you're tied.
No, yeah. Good.
Okay. You got any tips for the students out there?
Boy, it's such a fluid topic that it's hard to come up with one tip, like, you know, stay off the top ramen or something.
Stay off the top ramen. That's not bad.
That's not bad, but you know what? I'm sure I can do better. What would be some actual good actionable advice for students? Work your ass off, but do it for something that you care about.
Boom. That's a student. It's also worth mentioning at this point, when we arrived today in Seward, Nebraska to meet up with you, you were surrounded by what I would describe to be a harem of college student females. That's
exactly how I would describe it.
Yeah.
We were the first guys to walk in that room,
there probably
outside of Paul.
There were probably 19 women around Stefan at that point, probably could be 30.
You saw me, in other words, in my natural environment.
Indeed. Indeed, I did.
Yeah. And what typeface is not in your natural environment? This is the taboo typeface.
Oh, I think Helvetica is awful. I would never use it in anything.
Do you use Arial instead of that?
Is that meta humor really going to work? Is that going to work on the podcast?
Totally going to work.
Man,
it goes over like you wouldn't even believe.
You know what? If you just put that little ding cowbell noise behind it or something,
then it'll totally
work. I would say that my favorite new font, though, is Home Run Script by Doyle Young.
Home Run Script.
Because if you ever need a nice sort of loopy typeface, that's the typeface that I use on the title cards for the Daily Monsters right now.
Hmm. Oh, he's saying that's his favorite. He's still not giving out what he doesn't like. He can't do it.
Well, I think we were going to go with Helvetica. I think I'm going to accept Helvetica as the official answer, because I think after that movie came out, maybe everyone got a little too big on the Helvetica love, and maybe they need to chill out a little bit.
No, come on. I rib Helvetica because Helvetica and I were tight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, give it a hard
Helvetica
time.
Helvetica is my woman.
Doesn't pay the rent, though.
No. I occasionally cheat with Universe.
Yeah.
Or Stymie. You know, for a wild weekend of stymie.
That's good. I don't know if that's the appropriate response.
Well, hey, we really got to thank you for being on the show.
We do. Thank you very much
for
taking
the
time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for doing the monster that we may or may not be leaving right now to go actually do. And everyone can click on the link pretty much the entire show to go to Amazon.com to buy 100 Days of Monsters.
Or go to Daily Monster and just check out some of the monsters. You don't have to immediately buy it. There's a showroom. There's a showroom.
He's letting you play the monsters a little bit for free. You can get some free samples, you know?
Ooh, like a drug dealer.
But if you want to
get your first monster for free.
But if you want to see it on the big screen, you got to get the DVD.
Yeah, that's true.
He just gives you a little nibble.
Well, thanks again for being on the show. We love it. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you back next week. To send questions or comments to The Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.